Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, I know how much you would love to make the Jets' last-second victory over the Buccaneers yesterday the good martini, because who knows how many they'll have. But I'm sure you're relishing that to start the season. The Jets are 1-0.
Heading for a first-place showdown with the New England Patriots on Thursday. So I'm going to gloat every minute I can until Thursday night.
That is not the official good martini. The official good martini comes to us from Colorado. There are recall elections for different state lawmakers out there due to their very aggressive gun control push earlier in the year in the wake of the Newtown tragedy and, of course, the president's own unsuccessful push for gun control here in Washington. Jim, in the Morning Jolt today, looking at two specific elections. One of them certainly seems to be favoring the incumbent Democrat, but the other one, also a Democrat, John Morse. Turnout so far in this race, Jim, as you crunch the numbers here, looks like the Republicans are ahead of the Democrats, and now it's just a question of how the independents are turning out.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, obviously, we don't know for certain that every Republican is going to vote in favor of the recall and in favor of the Republican candidate. We don't know that every Democrat is going to be voting against the recall, but we can assume that the vast majority on each side are going to be preferring their party's option. And it looks really good against State Senator John Morse, and not so great against Angela Gurron, who is running in Pueblo. Worth noting that Morse had kind of a 50-50, I think it was like a 51-49 type district. Pueblo is a slightly more Democrat-leaning, I think it was like 55-45 last time she was up. In most circumstances, if you're not voting on November, you're going to have much lower turnout. On the other hand, there's been a ton of coverage for this, and everybody is doing their best. I know the NRA is on the ground in support of the recall. Charlie Cook is out in Colorado Springs right now, and he calculates that the anti-recall forces have outspent the pro-recall forces by about an 8-to-1 ratio. So that is a pretty sizable hurdle to overcome. There are a whole bunch of casual voters who probably won't get involved in there. And after a while, it basically comes down to who wants it more, who's more motivated. And Lord knows, there's a lot of motivation on the pro-Second Amendment side. So the early numbers look pretty darn good for the GOP in one, and not doomed in the other one, but certainly need to pick up their game a little bit. Kind of interesting to see how a split decision would be interpreted. But we will know tomorrow night. And so if you know somebody who lives in either Pueblo or Colorado Springs, give them a call, give them a nudge, make sure they got out and vote. Could be two very big and consequential special elections out there.
On to the bad martini now, Jim. And just like Libya owned this spot back in 2011 mm-hmm. for us, Syria has owned this, and specifically John Kerry. I'll let you get to the unnamed official and his analogy of what our strike would look like. But John Kerry now under criticism for saying the United States is considering only a, quote, unbelievably small limited strike. So I'm not sure exactly what that entails. One person on Twitter said this looks like we're ratcheting everything down to short sheeting Assad's bed. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, the metaphors just get better and better today. So the first thing was, because when I wrote the Morning Jolt today, one of the first things on my mind was I had four big questions that the president is going to have to address in the next 48 hours. Tuesday night, he makes his big address. And you know, one big question, and probably maybe the most central one, was, are we really going to try to inflict a lot of serious damage on the Assad regime? Or are we just doing something to say we did something? Are we just trying to save face of the administration having set the red line, seeing it crossed, and then having no consequence? When you go out with the UK foreign minister and keep emphasizing how it's going to be an unbelievably small, limited kind of effort, very limited, very targeted, very short term, well, then it certainly looks like we're just doing things symbolic, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of hard to believe, as I think somebody had said on Twitter, you really don't intimidate the enemy when you keep promising how small your attack is going to be. So I actually did some research and I looked into it. And, as far as we know, assuming the publicly known information about Syria is accurate, they have 3 chemical weapons storage depots, 5 scientific research centers believed in the production of it, 23 military air bases, including some international airports that fly military jets out of, 2 dual-use sites that are believed in chemical weapons production, about 1,000 tons of material at all of those sites, a few dozen SS-21 ballistic missile launchers with a range of 72 miles, 200 Scud Bs, 60 to 120 Scud Cs, and then anywhere from 700 to 1,000, let's say, planes and helicopters of different types. Does that sound extremely small to you, Greg?
Not exactly.
Well, obviously, you're not going to hit all of it. But, I mean, you know, if you blow up one building here and a couple of planes there, you're not really inflicting that much damage on this program. So to really do the damage that they're talking about, you'd figure it'd have to be at least 3 days of sorties and a couple hundred sorties. Then you got to figure out if you damage them on the first strike, then you got to do the second ones. And if you're going to be doing more and more airstrikes, you got to take out the air defense. Anyway. You get the idea that we're looking at a, you know, to do the kind of damage they're talking about, you'd have to make it a very sizable military strike. But because it's unpopular and because everyone has fresh memories of the Iraq War and because everybody's afraid of escalation, John Kerry has to run around emphasizing that it's going to be very small and very limited. Well, you can't both be true. And my sense is that John Kerry is the kind of guy who just blurts out the first thing that sounds that he thinks will be persuasive, whether or not it's true. And it sounds like he's already caused the administration a major headache from this. Greg, I'll let you jump in if you have any comments on that before I get into the breakfast cereal metaphor.
John Kerry has been all over the map on this, and you're right. The urgency of responding to the crisis and then trying to offset that with people who are obviously leery about going to war, some people at all, a lot of people in this circumstance, and so trying to dial back the urgency with, oh, it's really nothing. The contrast is striking. But yes, get to this important part of a complete breakfast.
So, I mean, you wonder if, first of all, you sometimes see unnamed officials quoted, and you do wonder if the quotes are either made up entirely or if the officials are not entirely sober when they make these comments. Because this is in USA Today this morning. A second senior official who has seen the most recent planning offered this metaphor to describe such a strike. If Assad is eating Cheerios, we're going to take away his spoon and give him a fork. Will that degrade his ability to eat Cheerios? Yes. Will it deter him? Maybe. But he'll still be able to eat Cheerios. I think in this metaphor, Cheerios are chemical weapons, which I think is a very unfair comparison. I like Cheerios. Everybody likes Cheerios. And the spoon and the fork is his ability to use the chemical weapons, and so he won't be able to use his main way of eating Cheerios slash using chemical weapons, but he'll be able to use another way, which is almost as good, depending on how important the milk is to your Cheerio experience. that you know, with fork, you just use the fork and you scoop it up and you put it into your mouth. So this is our metaphor. It sounds ridiculous, and what it's casually admitting is that we're going to hit him. And he's still going to be able to use chemical weapons, really raising the question of why these planning of this, like, you know, again, why we're doing this, because we're attempting to punish something that I suspect we're likely to get more of if we don't send a sufficiently punishing level of attack. And then you just kind of add in the surreal nature of the fork, knife, spoon, Cheerio, serving knife, you know, like maybe you should just avoid breakfast cereal metaphors if you're talking about bombing other people.
Could be. Now, the question is, what about a spork? Where does that
fit
in?
There you go. Yes. You know.
Hard to put all these analogies together. Okay, on to the crazy martini now. And there were a lot of candidates today. I saw one story where Americans clicked on Miley Cyrus twerking stories 12 times more often than serious stories, which gives you an idea of why we are and where we are in many ways in this country. Another one is that Dennis Rodman says the North Koreans want to make sure everyone knows that they're cool. So that was an important trip. But the winner today is both Anthony Weiner and Meet the Press. Meet the Press, for some reason, decided the guy who has what, 7% in the latest poll in New York City was deserving of a 5-minute slot on Meet the Press, and apparently a live interview this morning on the Today Show that I didn't see. Savannah Guthrie did the interview, and she was actually asking some pretty tough questions. Why are you still doing this? It's pretty clear you're not going to win. Here is Weiner saying not only does he think he's going to win, but he thinks he's going to do even better than that.
Before we do postmortems on what happens if I lose, let's have the campaign and let's see if I win, and then we can move forward from there. And after I serve 2 terms, perhaps we can have that conversation.
Jim, my favorite part was the young people shrieking in the background when he talked about winning and serving a second term. So not only is he going to win, but 2017, don't even bother other people.
There were a couple of people who are asking this weekend why Weiner is still getting such extensive coverage, considering how he's expected. He's pretty much, you know, down in single digits. And more than a few folks on the right are starting to speculate that the attention on this race and on particularly on Weiner. Look, Anthony Weiner has become a big public pinata. Republicans hate him, Democrats hate him, independents hate him. Everybody except for 7% of the population hates him. So he's a very safe story. You can write about him. You can interview him. Apparently, he's always willing to do these interviews. He's not going to turn these things down. Can't do much more damage to himself than he already has. And it's a way, if you're a major news organization, you know, that ordinarily would be covering this very uncomfortable story of a Democratic anti-war president who rose to power in frustration over the Iraq war, calling on for an unpopular war against a Middle Eastern Ba'athist dictator with chemical weapons, who now looks like he's very possibly going to lose the congressional vote, and whose Secretary of State keeps running around the world blabbing about how tiny and minuscule the attack is going to be, and his unnamed advisors suggesting that his this attack can be compared to taking away spoons for breakfast cereal. Let's talk about Anthony Weiner instead. In other words, this is a way for a liberal media that is really uncomfortable with the way the Syria war to use up airtime to occupy it. And you might be thinking, oh, Jim, that's just you being paranoid. That's not that likely. Well, the lovely Eliana Johnson, a contributor to National Review Online, points out that NBC is now gearing up for their third Anthony Weiner interview within an 18-hour span. What changed in the past 6 hours? What's new? You know, he's still Anthony Weiner. He's still down very low, and he's still an after run. And it's just a, keep your eyes open for coverage of rather inane stories that may be, you know, there because the press is really not, you know, their hearts aren't into writing about an increasingly unpopular president launching an unpopular war with almost no domestic support, splitting his own party, and with unforeseen consequences for U.S. national security.
Well, the one-year anniversary of Benghazi's on Wednesday. They could report on that, but I guess that's not in their interest.
Yeah. You know, we have a multitude of stories to work, Greg. We have no problem.
How would you like to be the guy who's still losing to Anthony Weiner? Why is that guy still in the race? That's what I want to know. Man.
Maybe he needs to get into a scandal.
Fascinating start to the week, Jim. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.